Very good, and welcome to the Fred Report Technical Market Call for April 6th, 2023. We'll get right into it. Hotter weather here in the southeast, so I want to get outside and go to the pool, actually, today if I can. First of all, stocks, we still stay in the trading range. The trading range is continuing. We're looking for a low area of 380 or so on the downside, and 420 to 440 on the upside. This is on SPY. Obviously, other indexes will do some different things, and we'll talk about that in a minute. The main thing to realize is this is not a straight line, just up and down, up and down. We're sort of meandering around. We're looking for 420 to 440 by the end of April. We've got 20 days or so to get there. And we're within striking distance now at, I believe, 406, 407. Sorry, I was looking at something else. We'll take a quick look at this now. But again, we're in striking distance there. We've had some questions on this, on some things, and we'll address them here. The first one is, in a trading range, realize that relative strength and trend following systems do not work as well as they do in a market that is trending. That means that Dorsey Wright ETFs like DWAS, like PDP, all of these should do less well for now. The trick is to find opportunities to invest in them so that you can take advantage of the next trend, when they suddenly will start to work better again. So use your stochastics, look at them when they're low, realize that in this environment, the key indicator to really look at is probably going to be the stochastics, and in many cases, the daily stochastic is going to be the most important, at least in the buy patterns. Weeklies are also important, and again, one question we were asked is, will 480 hold on the downside, or do we have the chance of making lower lows? And the answer to that question is, I do think that on one of the declines that we have in this range, we will break the 380 area and possibly go as low as 350, 360. But I think we should break that area. What happens when you're in a range is after a while, everyone gets used to it. You need to shake people out. You need to scare them a little bit. Now, if you're looking for trading vehicles, what do you use? Obviously, you pick a couple of large cap trading stocks that are going to trade with the S&P, and that is the cap-weighted S&P. RSP is likely to do a little less well in a range as well. The key here is, the way I put it to somebody yesterday is, invest in RSP when it's down and the stochastics are down. Buy SPY for trades when you've got a trading opportunity. You know, obviously, there's a lot of large cap names that you can talk about. We like, Lilly is one we have. Apple is another one. Microsoft is another one. But look at some of these larger cap names to trade. But you're going to want to be positioning in your models in investment positions on stuff when that's down that may not be these big cap names. A perfect example of what's going on in terms of rotation. We've seen that healthcare has been weak coming into this particular period. Now all of a sudden healthcare is strong because it's down near the bottom of the range on XLV. UNH, the biggest stock in healthcare and the biggest stock in the Dow, was also down near the bottom of a range. And all of a sudden these stocks are up, and some of the materials and industrials that we like Nucor, are down. This is normal. And the other thing to realize that's normal is you're going to have bigger swings in some of these names that we like and some of the names that you like. If the range is a 30% range, at one point the stock is going to be down 30% and up 30%. You just have to pick some names that you think are strong fundamentally and use the technicals to buy them and be patient. These ranges always end. And we think this one will end too. We've seen with some of the things in breadth, like the Zweig breadth thrust indicators, those indicators are positive and suggest bullish resolution to this problem that we're in this range. But they are more conditioned indicators. They don't suggest bullish resolution in the next month and a half or two. So we're seeing all sorts of favorable signs, but we may not go yet. Let's talk about the bond market for a minute. And again, we thank Marty Morrow, if he's listening in today, for participating in the call. We still see TLT as a trading range, 97.98 on the downside, 110 to 112 on the upside. You know, that's going along. We did put in the midweek PGF, which is something that he recommended, and we talked about that's trading back up. Some of these banks could trade back up. It's noteworthy you're now starting to see some bifurcation in these banks, the fundamentally strong ones and the fundamentally weak ones. Have a look, for example, one that we've had on our list off and on is Fifth Third. Fifth Third is trading up towards the top end of a consolidation. That would be in the 2750 area. It's about a point away. Whereas First Republic, FRC, is trading down near the bottom end of that consolidation. It's not up today to speak of at all. That suggests that we want to start to see some of these weaker banks go and go away, and some of these stronger banks actually perform well. The real kicker here, though, is investment positions in the stronger things. We think Bank of America is a good investment here. You want to be taking investment positions, and again, especially with these banks, have patience. We've been asked about the commodities and oil and what, you know, is going to happen with seasonal weakness in oil. And so far what's happened with both XLE and with USO is those markets have gapped up, and now they're starting to build some consolidations while the effects of this surprise are being absorbed. And again, we think, you know, we were hoping we could see a bigger drop in some of these oil names. But again, the strong ones like Chevron are doing well. We got to 150. We were hoping for 140 down near the real bottom of the October range. There's some gaps down in there. Sadly, it looks like that may not occur. But again, these are names you want to be positioning in for investment purposes. ExxonMobil is another one. We were sort of hoping that could get down to 90. It stopped around 98 and has taken off to the upside, which is why, again, you want to have investment positions in the things you want to have and pick away at them and buy them over time. Because, you know, if we're wrong on some of these things, we think the resolution is going to be to the upside. And if you're already in, that's not such a bad situation. We've been asked about gold. I'm going to mention a couple things about gold. The first one is GLD. We missed the second rally in this market. Without meaning to toot my own horn or mitigate the fact that I missed that, we did play that in January up to around 180 or so and dumped it. And so it's really about $6 on GLD above where we sold it. We do not advocate chasing it simply because we still don't see a lot of professional accumulation in the metals, frankly. And without that, we feel that there's risk. If you want to trade it for a month or so into the debt ceiling. Marty Morrow, one of the things he said on the call last week that was sort of a throwaway remark, but that really makes sense is, gold is probably up for the debt ceiling. Back in 2011, when we had the debt ceiling problems and some of the foreign currency problems that we had, you saw gold do fairly well, but then it died. And so we think that there's trading possibilities there into the debt ceiling, which we think you're going to start to see effects of in May. So you've got a month or so if you want to trade it. Again, look at the indicators. Try to buy when the indicators are down, even if you're using hourly charts. And just be aware that if this starts to slip, it could slip a little bit more and a little bit more quickly because of the lack of professional accumulation. In terms of any other commodities, Jack, we'll take a look at the agriculturals this week, but we see that DBA has come off the bottom end of a range. Agriculturals tend to have a seasonal peak in July, at least for the biggies, corn and soybeans. Wheat can be contra-seasonal because there's winter wheat crops, but these are trading well, and we would expect rally into June, July on the agricultures. And we'll look at those, as I say, Jack will make me look at those on the weeklies. In terms of, one other thing I want to mention about gold, I have a note here to give you an idea of some of the possible effects of the debt ceiling. This is interesting just to note. The gold futures market is very small compared to treasury bonds. If you look at the open interest on the 10-year note and realize that if just 10% of that open interest shifts into gold, that will double the open interest in gold, which means huge demand for gold at that point in time. Okay, that could easily, if that starts to happen, put gold up 300 or 400%. It would be a very quick move, but if that's the reason, if the debt ceiling is the reason it's going up and people do start to move out of bonds and into gold, even that small shift in the treasury market would have huge implications for the metals. And again, you know, you don't know if that's going to happen. People have talked about that happening in other instances like that, and it never has happened. But that's not to say that it could. I just want you to realize that the gold futures market is small. And again, anyone who wants to look at that for themselves, please go to our website that we recommend, futurestradingcharts.com, futures.tradingcharts.com, and have a look at the open interest figures on those commodities. Let's move over to international for a minute. We still like Switzerland. We noticed that Switzerland is doing quite well today. Fez is doing less well. It's up a little bit. We don't have any real changes in international except that, again, we're concerned that Fez, the Eurostox 50, is close to the top of a long-term trading range dating back to 2009. We may be seeing the end of any sort of European outperformance in here, so we would just be a little bit careful in there. In emerging markets, no change. Obviously, China's had a rally. China is now consolidating. After that rally, the daily stochastic has gone into sell mode on GXC, so you could see a little bit of pullback there. Again, what that tells me is we're not going to chase anything with emerging markets here. We're going to buy when EEM stochastic comes down to 20, or certainly when GXC or PGJ stochastics come down to 20, because China has such an outsized effect on some of these emerging markets. One of the things we should mention is we spoke a couple of weeks ago about using an active mutual fund approach to emerging markets. Frankly, we prefer that. We've talked about EELV, which does get you out of China in periods of volatility. That is trading a little bit stronger than EEM in some respects now. But again, when China does well, EEM is going to do well. When China does badly, you're going to wish you hadn't had as big a position in China. And again, we mentioned that for our purposes, when we look at the holdings, we're counting China and Taiwan together. With that, I think I'm going to pass the call over to Jeff Garbaz. We don't have any other real prepared remarks here. Honestly, things are going about as we think that they should, and so we have no changes and don't see any reason to make any changes in what we're looking for or talking about here. So, Jeff, do you have anything for us?
Yeah, I do. So I want to start with the S&P, and from there I'm going to move on to the Russell. So the S&P 500 has 500 stocks in it.
It actually has 510 right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like,
sorry.
Well, you got double counting and some things like the Google is in there twice. Yeah. Anyway, here's the point. Only 66 names have a strong tech rank right now. which basically means like 340 suck. And a lot are like tracking exactly against the S&P, but in the way I look at stuff, a rank of 40, 30, 20, or 10 is like 314 type names. So it's only a certain number of stocks that are causing the S&P to be up for the year. And how is that a good thing? I mean, it's a good thing if everything else is going to rise the way that the top, say, 65 stocks have done. But if that's not going to happen, then we're potentially looking at a really shitty second quarter.
That is true. We could be. What I'm looking at, Jeff, is we've had fairly strong breadth numbers, as people saw in the monthly. Those numbers then were completely annihilated in the banking crisis, and now we basically got my daily Fred's breadth oscillator back to oversold, where those breadth numbers can start to pick up again. Now, Jeff, I have to tell you, I would have to go back and look at a lot of history on my Fred's breadth oscillator to see as big and as quick a swing as we had from overbought to extremely oversold as we had this last time. But nonetheless, that swing in breadth is what's caused RSP and some of these other S&P mid-level names in the 500 to weaken, right? And we're in position now for those to strengthen. So you're right, we could have problems, but where the breadth indicators are would suggest that we are not going to have them. Now, we can still be dead and lackluster for a second quarter. We're kind of expecting the range to continue, but it doesn't look like a complete disaster to me.
Yeah, so we've had a rally the last couple of weeks in breadth. I'll give you that. And but it's turned down this week. This week has been a really shitty week for the breadth of stocks. And basically, tech has had its ass kicked. So are you not concerned about what's happened this week so far as it relates to breadth?
Jeff, no, because if you looked at the McClellan oscillator in the monthly, it had moved all the way to overbought. It needs to come down. And again, Jeff, the dichotomy between tech, which was overbought within the context of a range, and healthcare, which was oversold in the context of a range, is not a surprise. And again, we talked about this before, Jeff, but I'm going to take a little time and mention it again. Most of us on the call are accustomed to buying breakouts and looking for big trending moves in stocks, in certain sectors and things. In a trading range, those breakouts fail on the upside and the false breakouts fail on the downside. So what happens in a range very often is you see a rotation where something goes up and does a false breakout and people buy it, and then it goes back down to the bottom end of the range. And then on the next advance in the range, the leadership changes to another sector, and you do that same mistake again. And in a long enough range, you'll see every sector try to go and lead and fail. And so the danger is you end up with a bunch of really good names at higher prices and you feel disgusted. And you end up not playing when the market finally breaks out. So, you know, in a range, you buy weakness and you sell strength.
So what's the definition of range?
I think the range is, like on XLV, for example, the range is, I believe, let me get it up, 120 to 140, right? And it's come off of that 120 area quite nicely, and it's going to go back to 140. And the real thing, Jeff, on this is when you look at the long term on XLV, you'll realize that it's basically been in this range since last April. The lows have held, and it hasn't really gone up through 140. It's challenged it three times, right?
Yeah,
now, you're buying it, and let's say we make a horrible mistake, Jeff, and we buy it at 120, 125, and it breaks out to the upside and becomes leadership, and we're off to the races, and there it goes, right? What's wrong with that if we're in it?
Nothing.
Right? Where the danger comes is we don't sell some of the positions. I always tell people in this kind of environment, you want trading positions, you want investment positions. And if you sell your trading positions and they keep going, the definition of trading is, did I make money? I don't care if I sold it. Right?
So the Russell, so the Russell 2000, at the end of January, the full universe of stocks, which let's call it 5,400 stocks, 79% of them were higher.
Yes.
Then after February, that number came down to 67% of stocks were higher. And then once we finished up the quarter last week, we're down to only 50% of stocks being higher. And the range, you know, the Dow was up 38 basis points. The Russell was up, call it 2.43 or something like that. And the NASDAQ 100 was up, you know, 20.10% for the quarter. So to me, like, and tell me if I'm crazy, I think the most important thing to be watching here is the Russell to see if we get improvement in the Russell or we don't.
Yeah, and Jeff, we probably will. It's down near the bottom end of a range.
So the two biggest components of the Russell are KRE, regional banks, and that just looks like complete crap still. It does. All it looks like is a hockey stick, you know, where it's straight down, and then your the blade is what we're in right now, and we've yet to improve upon that. So what's your thinking on KRE? Do you think we're going to get improvement on KRE, or is there another leg to the downside on KRE?
I think you have to get the puck out. Sorry, that was
nice.
A really bad joke.
That was good. That was actually good.
Which I
like that.
Had
good.
To make, Jeff. What I'm looking at more is in KRE, because that sector's in trouble and will be probably sideways for a while. But again, if you look at XLF, right, which is the financials in general, all we did on that horrible banking news was move back down to the bottom end of the 30 to 37, 38 range.
Agreed.
Right. Now, we did it on the world is ending kind of news, which means to me, I look at the weekly stochastic on XLF, and I think it's going to be one of the sectors that is the next leadership here in the range. Probably not on this run up, but on the next run up after we come down. But I have to be buying this weekly stochastic that's held 30, maybe not the regional banks. But again, Jeff, some of these regional banks are starting to trade better. I think you don't buy KRE. I think you buy individual banks that you know and you like.
Yep. And then the other thing is, obviously, we had OPEC Plus, and that's turned out to be a buy the rumor, sell the news story this week so far. They're not doing well today. But what's your thinking on XLE, and more specifically, because it's more small cappy, is XES, which is the Spider Oil and Gas Equipment Services ETF.
Let's see.
XES is a symbol for that.
XCF, X-Ray Charlie.
No, X-Ray Eddie Sam.
Ah, XEF.
S
Sam. S is in Sam, sorry. Yeah, I've been sort of avoiding the services, but that also looks like a nice 70 to 90 range. And, of course, we're right, you know, pretty much in the middle of it. So that looks good. And, again, a weekly stochastic buy.
Okay, so we're still okay?
I think we're okay there.
Energy.
You know, the interesting one here is PSCE. Because that should have been or should be affected the most by weak seasonality, which we still have.
Right.
But it's also a weekly stochastic buy, and it's rallying on this news.
Okay. Cool. Those are. I'm just concerned because I kind of feel like, okay, yeah, my portfolios did well, but I kind of look underneath and like, oh man, it just doesn't look good, you know? But by the same token, if we get improvement across all that stuff, we could have another quarter like we just had, except for the returns are going to be generated more from the mid-cap, small-cap stuff as opposed to the NASDAQ 100 type stuff.
Yeah, Jeff, the word that I had from people on the trading desk that I talked to was a lot of the bank money went into things like Apple and Microsoft and AVGO, which is Broadcom, and that we've been recommending in our tech space simply because they needed to put the money somewhere, and that was an easy large-cap place to buy.
Well, here you go. Here's the stat, which is kind of a good stat for people. And we can put it in next week if you want to. I took the top 10 names sorted by market cap in the S&P and looked at year-to-date return. And here are the names, and then here are the returns. Apple, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, NVIDIA, Tesla, Meta, Taiwan Semi, and Visa. That's sorted by market cap, highest, you know, working down. And here are the year-to-date returns. 27, 20, 18, 17, 23, 90, 68, 76, 24, and 9. That's the return. So basically, there's your entire quarter on the S&P being up 7%. And if you didn't own those names, you didn't get the return in your portfolio for the quarter.
Right. Let's put that in chart of interest. And
okay.
All I can tell people is if this really acts like a trading range, those names probably won't do so well in the next quarter, and other names will do that.
Right. The name that sticks out to me that seems like it's potentially the one that gets the give back is Tesla. What do you think about that name?
I've been looking for Tesla to go to back to 170 for a bit.
So back to 170.
Yeah. In other words, it's trading at 183, and
yeah,
you could see this easily pull back to 160 to 170.
Okay. Cool. Well, I haven't spoken in 2 weeks because
you couldn't talk. I know, and I'm glad to hear your voice.
Yeah. And so anyway, I'm kind of done with my Q&A, and I'll turn it back to you for questions.
Got it. Let's have some questions from everybody that is on the call that has a question.
Hey, Fred, this is Joel.
Hey, Joel.
Hey, man. First of all, thank you again. I think I try to tell you this every time I talk to you. Thank you again for all of your advice, and it's definitely been very helpful. So thank you for starting off the call because you're kind of the guy who sort of drew me in. I didn't know anything about DWAS or PDP, and now virtually all my clients own them. So I was mad, right, when the quarter ended and the way that you were discussing, you know, about quarters and, you know, all that, what just happened, how the sectors that just did the best may underperform for a while, and then the sectors that just got their ass kicked may do really well. So, like, you know, whatever, which makes sense. Well, they rebalance every quarter, right? And so I was like kind of shocked at the changes, right? So for instance, these are just for instances. DWAS last quarter had 11.5% in healthcare. Now it's at 19.81%. Infotech went from 20.5% down to 14.85%. Financials, which this makes perfect sense, went from 10.8% down to 7.5%. Energy dropped a little bit, about a point and a half. On PDP, the changes were so dramatic. Like, financial services actually went up. And tech went from 13%, so this is larger cap, right? Went from 13% to 25.36% of the entire fund, right? Energy fell from 11 down to 6.6. Healthcare fell from 21.4% at the beginning of last quarter to this quarter, now we're at 9.99%, okay? Now, when I first looked at it, I was like, oh my God, I just got out of all the shit that got its ass kicked and just went right into all the stuff that just happened to have a nice run last quarter, a lot of which was because it was so oversold at the end of last year. But then I started going through and looking, especially on PDP, because that was the bit sharpest changes, and looking at the holdings. And the largest, like literally a third of the financial service stocks are MasterCard and Visa. I looked at the charts. I can't see anything wrong with those. And then I looked at tech. The 5.5 of that 25% is two stocks: Cadence Design Systems, CDNS. You can look at that chart. And then ANSS, which I'm not really familiar with that company. But those are the two largest holdings, and literally it's 25% of the tech stocks. And I can't see anything wrong with holding those stocks. Like, if I owned them, I wouldn't want to sell them. And so here's my question with the way that you started on this discussion. Am I making a mistake in hanging on to these funds because we may be stuck in a trading range? If my ultimate belief is eventually rates are going to come down, all of this, I think we're at record highs in money market cash levels right now. Record highs, $5.5 trillion. If this money were to come back out like it has in every bull market when interest rates start to fall, this market could absolutely blister higher. And if that's my ultimate long-term belief, would you suggest I stick with these, or do you think I should just go kind of what you were saying into RSP or some of these others? I know this is a long question, but it affects so many of our team's clients. I just wanted to get clarity from you and what your
Sure.
thoughts were.
Let me answer that with a long answer, or try to make it a shorter answer. Obviously, if you think about PDP or DWAS, those rebalance at set times, once a quarter, and the same day every year of each quarter, correct?
Correct.
Now, depending on how the trading range works, they may not be rebalancing on the lows of the trading range. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right. So they may end up buying some of the stuff that's not going to perform well in the next move in the range on the rebalance because they're buying near the highs rather than near the lows on some of the things. Right? But
Right.
the real question is this, and again, if you studied as I did in the 90s, commodity trading systems, lots of commodity trading systems. Okay. What you find is markets in general, not necessarily the stock market, but markets in general are in trading ranges longer than they are in trends. But the big money is in the trends. In other words, are you familiar with a gentleman named John Henry?
I'm not.
Okay, John Henry started out trading a commodity fund in Newport Beach, California in the 80s, and I met him there, and we worked on a couple of commodity systems together. Okay, now he owns the Boston Red Sox. His commodity funds have been among the best performers over time. But it's all trend following that he uses. Okay? His
Okay.
systems get chopped up in ranges, and one of the secrets to trading something in a range is how not to get chopped up in a range if you're using a trend following system, how not to take big losses when the system whipsaws, which it will do.
Okay.
Okay? So relative strength is the same way. You need a trending move to get relative outperformance in something so that you can buy it. right? And the assumption is that that relative outperformance will continue. And in a range, it may not continue right away, right?
Yeah.
So in the short term, you're going to have potentially less robust performance out of PDP and DWAS. In the long term, you're going to have nice trending moves in those that will more than offset the difficult performance you're having now.
Okay.
Right? But you've got to be patient and realize that that's just the way life is. Okay. Now, there's some things if you're a commodity trading advisor like John Henry you can do. For example, if you look at the various commodity markets, what you find is that there are extremely long trends in currencies and long trends in bonds, and very short trends in meats and ags, right? So if you've got half a brain, and Mr. Henry does have more than half a brain, you don't trade meats and ags. You trade the things that have the trending moves, right?
Right.
There's other people that love trading cattle because, I mean, just think about the supermarket, right? Yeah, you know, when you went to the supermarket last year, you would see hamburger in a range from $1 to $2 a pound, say. But hamburger never went from $1 to $10 a pound, right?
Right.
Well, if you like trading ranges, you trade cattle. Indeed,
yeah.
Just as an aside, one of the funniest things about the whole Hillary Clinton commodity trading scandal, for anyone who knows anything about commodity markets, is Hillary took a $3,000 account and ran it to $100,000 trading something that stayed in the trading range. Very hard to do.
Right.
And none of the really famous guys like Richard Dennis, right, or John Henry traded stuff that was in ranges. But that's neither here nor there. But so the answer to your question is, I own DWAS myself. I have accepted that it's going to underperform until we come out of this range. And what I'm actually doing with DWAS is it will still trade with the stochastics.
Yeah.
Especially the weekly stochastic. Right? So when that comes down to oversold, I'm adding some of it.
Okay.
I'm not going to add it when it's overbought because I know it's not going to work. In fact, you can say with pretty much absolute certainty that in its trading range, something like that has vastly less chance of working than, say, a strong stock like Apple. But I want to have it for when the market starts to trend, because one of the hardest things, certainly I don't know how to do it with any consistency. One of the hardest things to figure out is when you're going to leave that trading range and start trending again.
So what you're saying, on DWAS specifically, not really PDP right now, but on DWAS, is that stochastically oversold enough to where I would add to DWAS?
Yeah, I would consider adding to it here. I'd love to see if I could get DWAS to 66.67 to add as well, and I wouldn't add a lot, but I would be adding to it if you had some client money. In other words, if that is a component of your models, I would have my clients in it.
Okay.
And
it doesn't bother you that it is almost 20% healthcare right now?
No, not at all, because healthcare actually should start to go up. Now, that will fail horribly, right?
Okay.
And you'll have a disaster on your hand if it really rebalances more into healthcare and XLV gets to 140.
Right.
Right? Because then you'll have the chance that it'll collapse and go to 120, and your DWAS will have just rebalanced into it right at the peak.
Right.
Hurting you.
Okay.
Right. But the way I look at healthcare is, if I look at XLV, and we'll shut up in a minute for everyone else on the call. Hopefully they're not just signing off here. When I look at XLV, I see a huge long-term high-level consolidation going all the way back to April of 2021, basically. And it's held in terms of relative strength above the 2020 high. When this goes, it's probably going to go to the upside, and it's probably going to be very big.
Okay.
Right? And so I want to be in there.
Yeah.
But I'm
okay.
not trading healthcare.
Okay.
Right? I'm churning my account, buying either just plain SPY or buying stuff like Lilly that was at the bottom end of a range that's in healthcare that has all of a sudden had a huge move. Right, and we put Lilly, as you'll notice, in the back in the sector review when it came out 2 weeks ago. Now, again, if I were going to try to trade this in the sector review, I'd be hoping like hell that it stayed up here for another week and a half, and I'd take it out.
Okay,
but that's not the way we invest here. The people on this call are supposedly long-term investors.
Yeah.
Right? You want to buy it when it's down, and if it fails and goes back down, that's okay.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay.
So it's really just a game of patience at this point.
It's a game of patience, and yeah, look for some other stuff to buy as well. Buy maybe some cap-weighted healthcare for a while, or cap-weighted small cap for a while.
Yeah.
But realize that from trading ranges come trends, and from trends come trading ranges.
Okay.
So Joel, send me an email. I'll call you and show you something interesting that you'll get a kick out of. I can't go into it. I don't want to go into it here. Let's see if there are any other questions.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm sorry I took so much of the time.
No, that's okay. Other questions?
Hey, Fred. Keeping on the trend, keeping on the trend trading, what do you use to sort of try to catch the stochastics, in terms of...
No, I don't use the stochastic for trends at all. We also publish and use the 5 and 20 moving average.
Okay.
And what you'll see if you look at that is it is caught pretty much every major move in everything. It's not perfect, but nothing is. And I have a few filters that I use as well and some other moving average systems I use. And I actually have a trend following system that Larry Williams and I worked on that I also use, but I don't publish those.
Okay. All right.
Nice thing about the 5 and 20 moving average, by the way, is when something is going sideways, it doesn't chop you up because it's quick enough so that you're not like the 50 and 200-day moving average.
Right. Okay.
And if you look at it as a system, you're always long or short, and realize that where it fails, if you go back and you look, if you get really extreme in one direction or another, it will not change fast enough to avoid losing most of the profit back. There's other filters that I have for that.
So you use crosses on the 5 and 20?
Yes. And a perfect example for you, bring up your chart of GLD. And look at the period between April and October of 2021. And what you'll see is it went positive in April. The advance failed, and it went negative exactly where it went positive in July. It did go down, but then it crossed over again later on in October. And right around the same price, crossed back below and then back above at the beginning of 2022 and gave us the whole January move. So you had a bunch of bad trades in there, and then you caught a nice big trending move. And that's the way it's supposed to work.
All right, that's helpful. I appreciate that. A lot of us, obviously, we find ourselves, a week late, and then suddenly we're in the middle of the range saying, what the heck?
You use the stochastics for the range. The way I look at it is this way. If you buy when the stochastics are down and just giving a buy signal, the trend is always negative. As the stochastic moves up, the trend will go positive.
Right.
Okay. Then the question is, will that trend stay in effect or not?
Okay. That's helpful. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Materials, are they at the bottom of the range now? Alcoa, MTV?
No, I think XLB can certainly go down a bit more. Let me try to get a number for you on that, because I think XLB is still mid-range. I'd love to see that back at 74. 73 to 74. If I did, I'd definitely buy it, because I think that there's some good-looking stuff there.
Okay. So with that, appreciate that that thought plant. Obviously, the news of the day, the drivel on all day, FinTwit, et cetera, is recession. And obviously, materials and energy to an extent and others are, certainly reflecting that. Is it... A, how do you feel about that statement that, are you scared of recession? And B, is it too late to sell some of these cyclicals, basically?
I think if you've got good ones and they're in your models, that you don't sell them. What you might want to do if they come back down enough is buy a position in them and sell that position.
Okay.
When they go up. Lower your basis or raise your basis, actually, in that case, probably, so you don't have as much of a tax burden.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's going to be freaky here because, I think of Quick Draw McGraw. Don't just stand there, do something, right? We may end up where we were last July, this July, after going all over the place. And, Scott, I'm sure you remember, after all that banking and finance news and the banks falling apart and we're going to have no banks left and this, that, and the other, the spider closed for triple witching at 389.98, which I thought was just funny as hell.
Yep. And, okay.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Good enough. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, it's Peter.
Peter, what's up?
TNX looks like it's kind of breaking down today, the 10-year.
Yeah.
Do you need to see more from this to actually make it think like we're going to a new range, or what do you want to see here?
I'm actually, as soon as I get any sort of a recycle on that, I'm going to buy the living crap out of it.
Okay. So you think it's going back up?
I think it's going back up. But, again, I don't think it's going much anywhere. This looks like a pullback in an uptrend to me.
Yeah, okay. That's kind of what I thought you'd say. Frank Echo Zeta, the Euro Stocks 50, up like, 50% from the bottom. It seems pretty strong to me. Is this something that we should be keeping an eye on pullbacks now, or are we not really there yet?
Well, if you look at the long-term history of Fez, and I think it's real interesting that it's a Muslim hat and it's also Europe, right? go to bigcharts.com and take a look at all data. And what you'll see is this has been in a range from basically 25 to 45, 50 since 2009.
Yeah. Right.
I think the chances of this going much more than 50 are quite low.
Okay.
Right? Now, obviously, if you're in it, I wouldn't necessarily sell it, but also look at all data, please, on EWL, Edward William Leary.
Okay, got it.
And notice that huge uptrend that came down to support. That's the way I'm playing Europe.
Okay.
I would hold on to Fez, and I know, by the way, I don't know what effect this is going to have on the market. I've never been able to figure this out, but there are a lot of structured products in FEZ that expire in June.
Ah, all right.
A lot. Because I know, but put it this way, I probably got 20 clients, big teams, at all the firms that we cover that are in magically in these structured products on FEZ.
Yeah, usually when they show up, it usually means that they're thinking it's going to go up. So.
Yeah, and it could. I mean, but again, you know, if we're in FEZ and it really goes, that's not a horrible problem.
Right.
That's why I'm not selling it.
Yeah. But you don't. But you're not necessarily putting more money into it here either.
Not right here. I'd wait for 55. If this is going to 70 to 80.
Yeah.
And you buy it at 55, I don't think anyone's going to scream. But if you buy it at 45 and it goes to 30, people will scream.
Okay. Okay. Good. All right. Thank you. Perfect.
Sure. Other questions?
Fred, a couple quick stocks, please.
Yes, sir.
GSK.
Let me, sorry, just getting a chart, some different charts up. Which, what is the symbol? TSK, Tom, Sam, Cool Cigarettes?
No, Greg, Sam, Cool.
Greg, Sam, Cool. Short term, that looks pretty nice, and it's in healthcare, which is still one of my favorite sectors. Longer term, you've got a lot of resistance at 40, but if you got this good, I'd hold on to it.
Okay. CVS.
Charlie Victor Sam. I prefer Walgreens Boots Alliance to this, and I've got huge resistance in layers from basically 78 to 82. So if I were trading CVS and I got it a few weeks ago, I'd be a seller.
Okay. And you mentioned that, are there any banks technically that are sticking out to you?
You know, I like the looks of Bank of America, and if I worked at Merrill Lynch, I'd be putting that in my 401k right in here. I like the looks of PNC, Paul Normal Charlie.
Okay.
And I like Fifth Third, FITB.
Okay.
Right. Let me look at Huntington. I haven't looked at Huntington Bank shares in a while. That one's okay, but not great.
Okay. And the last one, PANW.
It's right near 200, which is the top end of a range. I would consider selling that at 200 or just a little bit less, selling at least part of it, Steve.
Great.
And I would accelerate that selling on any break of 187, because I think then you'd get 180, and a break of 180 would put it back at 165.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Got it. Other questions?
Fred.
Yes.
Hey, Fred.
One quick second, Nancy. I just got a Fred before you.
Okay. So, the Fred, can you just quickly, you don't have to give me any range or anything, but Google, Amazon, Baba, and Baidu. Any interest should we take, or we have? If we have it, we just hold on to them?
I think that those are all decent companies, except for maybe Baba.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I'd be in a huge hurry to sell them. Baba, if I could get 120 on that, I would be out the window.
Okay. Thank you very much. You answered
sure.
my question. Thank you.
Got it. Nancy.
Fred, will you look at ADM?
Yeah, and this, by the way, should rally into July. And you've got what looks like a decent little bottom. It needs to get above, oddly enough, 81.50. But if it can do that, I think you're going to get this back into the 88, 89 area. I think this is a good bet.
Thanks.
Other questions? Very well.
Hey, good morning, Fred.
Hey there.
On, on OIH, we talked a few weeks back when it was, you know, in the 260s, we thought it could get close to 300, which it did, I guess, on that OPEC news. So I got out kind of a small loss, but now I'm thinking, you think it's going to fill that gap back here at 277 or so? I was thinking of getting back into it.
Yeah, I would try that.
Because it looks like the weekly's turning right back up now, right?
So, yeah, I would certainly look at doing that, especially if you're trading. It sounds like more.
I have an order at 277.90. Should I adjust that or leave it?
I would raise that to 278.10, just because everyone's looking at 277.
Okay. All right. And how is IBB looking for you right now? Starting to perk back up a little bit.
Yeah, I can see this going all the way to 135 and then all the way back to 130, to 120, to actually 125. But again,
okay.
Some of the biotech stocks, some of the good ones are starting, especially some of the little ones, are starting to trade a little bit better.
Right.
And, you know, this is one of those sectors that I think will break out to the upside. It's just a question of when. You know, we got Amgen down near the bottom of the range and got rid of Gilead, and I wonder how that's worked out for me because I haven't looked at Gilead about the same.
Gilead's perked up the last, you know, all these defensive things have
yeah.
kind of perked up. I mean, Gilead's back to 84 now, you know. It's
yeah.
looking decent. And, yeah, I think I remember when we talked in January how that Q1 was the strongest quarter of all 16 quarters, you know, of the presidential cycle. Remember we were talking about
yeah.
that? I mean, it looks like it played out quite nicely, you know. We finished the quarter up, you know, 7%. So I will mention this, too, just maybe for other callers. Q4, which we, you know, of last year, Q1 and Q2 that we're in right now, those are the strongest of the entire, you know, 16
cycle. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, so far it's playing, you know, playing to that tune. I mean, we'll see if, you know, if we have a, I don't know what, you know, how this quarter is going to finish, but so far, you know, things
yeah,
are good.
Yeah, we're trading good. And, you know, we've got a good chance of trading up into the end of the quarter and then down afterwards.
So do you think we could fill that gap? I know we mentioned that gap on SPY at 427. And
yeah.
Remember, we talked about it early. We didn't think it would make it on the first move, but you thought maybe on the second move, you think we could probably do it this time?
Yeah. Someone who was looking at banks, by the way, Zion, if it can get above 31, this goes into the good bank category.
Okay. All right. So
Very
what do we
good.
Got? Few more months of chop, maybe, and then maybe break out in Q4. Is that your kind of your crystal ball?
It could be longer than 2 months, but you know it's probably not going to be the 10 years we had in the '70s.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking maybe Q4. It'd give us another 5 months or so.
Yeah, it could.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good, man. Have a good one.
You too. Have a normal day. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, it's Jeff, Santa Rosa Beach. How are you?
Good, Jeff.
Good, good. Take a look at BHP Group and SCX, Freeport-McMoRan.
Yeah, BHP, again, it looks like a little bit of a range. I'd like to see it come down a little bit more, maybe 57. And then I think you can trade it up to 64, 65. And God, my brain is going, Jeff. What was the second symbol? FCX, right?
That's right.
Okay. You know, I like the looks of this stock. We have it as a favorite in the sector review. If it can hold on in here, let me just check one thing. Yeah, I think that ultimately this is a 65. Sorry, blast all. Ah, no wonder. 45 to 50 name. If this gets to 45, it'll be very difficult to find another stock of its caliber. Sorry.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. No, and I apologize to everybody for that horrible joke.
I'm getting terrible. I can't catch them as quickly as
you're
I did
old,
when
Jeff.
I was working.
You're getting
press.
Old. That's why you're retired. I'm teasing. We'll talk to you
I'm
soon,
thinking
man.
Too much. I'm thinking too much. All right,
got
see
it.
You.
Other questions? Very good. Going once. Going twice. Very well. This will end the Fred Report technical market call for April 6, 2023. Everybody have a lovely weekend.